I'm Mark Gandy. This is CFO Bookshelf. I've mentioned on the show, I'm a fan of DataViz, and it's a practice I'm continually trying to improve. Once upon a time, Stephen Few, through his blog and his books, which, by the way, will set you back a pretty penny, well, he was the only game in town to teach us data visualization. And today, it's a whole new ball game. And there are lots of great writers in this space. One of them is Steve Wexler. I've been a fan of his for several years, mainly because I like his demeanor and the way he conveys information when I see him on YouTube videos. I also love the book, The Big Book of Dashboards, in which he's a co-author, and his newest book is The Big Picture, and I recommend it. I'm thrilled to have Steve as our guest as we talk DataViz for the next 30 minutes. I'm Mark Gandy. This is CFO Bookshelf, and our chat with Steve Wexler is coming up next. I just had to compliment Steve at the outset. I hit record right after I asked him, who needs Stephen Few when we have Steve Wexler?
Well, those are high compliments, especially since I think reading Stephen Few's books when I first started getting into this was remarkably helpful. I feel good about these two books, and they're for two wildly different audiences, but would argue there's a lot of good material out there from a lot of good people. So, yeah, in some cases, this may be the only data visualization book somebody reads. But there's a lot of really good stuff out there, including, you know, great stuff from Stephen Few.
The question I have for you is, how did you even get into this space? What's the origin story for you in getting into visual analysis, visual analytics, et cetera?
Oh, God, complete desperation in my career. I mean, I've had one frigging weird career. If you go to Data Revelations and look at my about page, you're going to see, oh, this guy has a background as a musician, you know, master's degree, undergraduate degree, master's degree in music, which, by the way, is one of the things that so attracted me when I discovered the work of Jeffrey Schaefer, my co-authors on the Big Book of Dashboards. And Jeff, in addition to being an MBA and C-level executive, also has a master's degree in music, is a brilliant trumpet player, but I've had an odd career, ended up founding my own software company, selling off the assets, founding a startup, not being able to keep that going. And, oh gosh, 15 years ago, first time in my life, I had to get a job. I had to be employed by somebody else and contacted friends at an organization called the E-Learning Guild. It's now called the Learning Guild, but it was people who were passionate about using technology to help people learn and perform better. And they had an opening in research, and they had thousands of people who were part of this organization. They said, if we could tap their combined intelligence about things, we could create second to none research reports. And I suggested, you know, instead of just making static reports, we could ask questions and create these interactive dashboards so people could, hey, gee, I just want to look at responses for my industry or for companies that are my size. This is 15 years ago. And they said, wow, that sounds like a great idea, but how are we going to do that? I said, oh, I know this wonderful software package I've recently discovered, and we should try this. And it was not Tableau, it was Spotfire that I had discovered. But when we started doing the vetting the different software packages, the different solutions that were out there, felt that Tableau would be a better fit. Probably the biggest reason was Tableau had undo. Oops, I didn't mean to do that. And Spotfire at the time kind of had a, oh, sorry, start all over again, kind of like chutes and ladders when you're a kid. So I ended up starting to use Tableau and really in love with it and was fascinated by it. And I was terrible at data visualization. I'll show this in my workshops. I will show my early work and show this is just terrible, which means it is possible to learn how to do this. You don't have to be natively brilliant or wonderful at it, and I'm certainly not. This is a skill that can be learned. You can get way, way better at this. And I think it relaxes people a bit to see that.
We're going to put a pin in that last comment about skill, because I have a question I've been dying to ask you on dashboards. So we're going to come back to that. We're going to get into the book in just a minute, the big picture. And here's what's cool about this. In the upper right-hand corner, there's this blurb from Seth Godin. That's incredible. How did you pull that off?
So the Jeff Schaefer and I offer a lot of workshops around the big book of dashboards. And Jeff pointed out a whole discussion around the famous Menard chart. Edward Tufte said this may be the greatest statistical graph ever drawn. This chart is held up as the Mona Lisa of all data visualization charts. And many people have seen this at some point. If you're in data visualization, you will probably see it. I think holding this thing up as this is what you should try to emulate is a huge mistake and has caused a lot of damage. But in any case, we discuss how Tufte holds this thing up. And then Jeff had this quote from Seth Godin saying, well, I think this is one of the worst charts ever made. And I couldn't find proof of this quote, you know, that I saw that it was in some presentation he had given. So I ended up contacting Seth and said, look, I want to contact you. Did you say this? Do you still feel this way? What are your thoughts about it now? To which he replied, oh, gosh, even more so, you know, now more than ever. And he gave me some other things saying, I don't think this is how people operate in the 21st century. And we had a nice correspondence about this. When the kind of final draft of the book was done, I contacted him again and said, might you be willing to write a book blurb? And he said, pretty much, probably not. He said, you know, not that I have, it's that I'm incredibly busy and I insist on reading the entire book, you know, before I'm going to do this, but it can't hurt. Why don't you send it my way?
He gets 1,000 of these requests.
Yes. 24 hours later, he sent me the book.
24 hours?
He read it, liked it, and provided the book blurb. So I was very grateful.
Well, I will just say great minds think alike, because I share the same opinions of him. So I can just say that Seth and I are alike, right?
There you go. Well, you know, and he and I are alike as well. We both have faces, we have hands, heads. I think he has more of a lack of hair than I do, but I'm catching up. But that was a very nice shot on the arm. And by the way, not that I am in any way in the same category and prestige as Seth, but I also believe that, oh, you want me an endorsement? You want a blurb? You want me to say something about you? It's my reputation. So I will insist on reading the whole thing and making sure it's And a lot of times I have to turn this down because I just don't have, someone just sent me this 800 page book. I said, I don't have, you know, I'm not going to have time to read this and I want to read the whole thing.
There are so many wonderful ideas and concepts laid out visually in the book. So when I say, can we go over a few big ideas? I don't even know if I can do this justice, but I want to pull out three terms if that's okay. Pre-attentive attributes. What does that $6 term mean in layperson's language?
It means things you notice without even noticing that you've noticed them. You know, that your mind processes this without any conscious thought and processes practically instantly. If I show you, seven balls and six of them are ping pong balls and one is a basketball, you're going to go, oh, wow, there's one big thing there. If I show you five lines and one's really long and all the rest are short, you're going to go, oh, I see a big line there. If I show you nine squares and eight of them are gray and one of them is blue, you're just going to go, oh, I see something that's different. And these are things that you don't have to attend to. You don't have to think about it. So things you notice without even noticing you've noticed them.
I still run into CFOs who say, I don't need the visuals. I don't need the graphs or charts. And I go back to that concept, pre-attentive attributes. And it's like, you're kidding me for the reasons you just stated.
Well, this is the whole catalyst for the book. There were two things. Both books came out about interactions with people and realizing, okay, people are not getting something. And I think we may be able to help them to get something. In the case of the Big Book of Dashboards, it was I remembered the particular example. Someone had data. They were convinced they should present it a certain way and were asking for help to automate the process and say, could we do this faster? And I said, there are better ways to show this. Not just faster. We can make this thing faster, but, there's a clearer way to do it. And they said, well, nonsense. This is the perfect way to show it. And I ended up writing a white paper saying, well, here, let me explain to you why what you're doing isn't as helpful as it might be. And they loved it. Unfortunately, their client didn't love it, and their client still insisted on doing it the crappy way. But that became the catalyst for this. In the case of the big picture, there were two things I noticed. One of the people who were taking my workshops, who are data visualization practitioners, they didn't understand the fundamental concepts of data visualization. They were missing this stuff. I did something 2 weeks ago with an incredible firm, amazing designers, this design team but they didn't kind of understand fundamentals of data visualization. So they were making beautiful dashboards and beautiful visualizations, but they weren't helpful. Now, these people are going to totally smoke my ass because they have wonderful design acumen that I don't. I can get better. So I can teach them to do what I do. I think they would have a harder time teaching me to do what they do. They're artists and brilliant. So I'm looking forward to seeing when they take this and to the level they'll be able to take it. But the biggest issue and the biggest frustration of my workshop attendees were their clients, their stakeholders, their bosses didn't buy in to data visualization. Hey, spreadsheets are fine. I prefer just to see the numbers. And I'm on this quest to say, numbers are great, but you'll see things that you didn't see before, and your time to insight would be drastically reduced. Instead of this minor task taking 30 seconds, you can do it in 3 seconds. You add up a lot of minor tasks that are 30 seconds, that's a lot of time, and they're error prone. Don't you want to do something which is faster and accurate and help you see something? And if you do it really well, you can persuade people, where just a table full of numbers probably won't do that. So that's the catalyst for the big picture.
I've been influenced, like you and many others in your space, by Stephen Fee. We mentioned him earlier, and I think I got this from him: red, yellow, green visuals. And it's like, I have grown to distaste visuals that have the stoplight colors. But now as I look at them, it's like, yeah, these are hard to read. But why the infatuation with red, yellow, green? Especially with CEO or business coaches, that's kind of the go-to. Why is that?
Your guess is as good as mine as to why that is. We're used to this idea of traffic light colors, and green means go, red means stop, and yellow is some caution. Fortunately, I think roughly 1 in 10 men in Western culture suffer from red green color vision deficiency. So the green and the red look identical, but fortunately they're in different positions. So the take is, I don't have to explain this to somebody: red, bad; green, good. Except there are certain corporations where the logo is red and the use of red means good, or other cultures where, if you look at stock market reports in China, red means the market's going up, green means the market's going down. So this is not as universal as some people might think. I also come to a quote from one of a dear friend and colleague that sadly died a couple of years ago. Her name is Kelly Martin. And she kind of lifted, everybody in terms of showing people what you could do with Tableau in terms of not just analytic integrity, but design acumen. And she said, there's no way to unugly red and green. And I tend to agree with that. For something which is a fascinating exercise is, let's say you've got the spreadsheet and it's just the sea of red, yellow, and green. Get rid of the green and the yellow and just leave the red part. And it becomes a much more useful spreadsheet because you now know immediately, you've just told me where the problems is. I don't need to know where the good things are. I need to focus on where there are problems. So even that little thing, just make everything white or gray and make the things that are problematic red, will greatly improve that traffic light spreadsheet monstrosity.
This next idea or concept may seem like everyone should know this, but you did a great job at distinguishing between quantitative and categorical data. What's the key insight there?
Well, do you mean with respect to color?
Yes.
So Jeff Schaefer and I, and I think Andy agrees with this as well. Jeff is, and Andy are my fellow authors on the Big Book of Dashboards. The number one place that people really mess up is in data visualization is color. They don't understand how to use it. And probably the number one infraction is categorical color. Hey, we've got 18 different product categories in our organization. We will have a separate color for each one to distinguish. And humans just can't process that many categorical colors. I'm maybe misquoting this person. So Cole Nussbaumer-Naflick, founder of Storytelling with Data and author of the book by the same name.
Said, love her work.
Color is a wonderful goal for a party, or being colorful is a wonderful goal for a party. The purposeful and refined use of color can make all the difference in the data visualization. I'll point out this massive dashboard with all this stuff going on, and they're just like, there's a red dot over here, a red dot over here, and one, and that's the first place people look at. Said, oh, because that those little color things drew my attention. I had no idea what to focus on, but this got me here. You create something with 14 different colors in it, of disparate colors. I don't mean shading of the same color where you might show profitability by state. And that could be, you're going to have maybe at most two colors, but different gradients of, that's fine. But gee, I've got, you know, the 50 states of the United States, I'm going to have 50 different colors for each one. Good luck making any sense out of that.
I want to jump into dashboards in our limited time here. I want to get this as practical as possible. And I hope I can ask this question well enough. So some people are just extremely creative. And that's one of my big frustrations, even in the Tableau space, is like, oh my gosh, these are beautiful visuals. I can't do that. But they have to back up and say, is this even impactful? Is this useful? Is this predictive? So it's like, I kind of give myself a break. But the question I have is, even as I build dashboards in Tableau, can you get to the point where you can learn, or can only a design person be the person who builds these dashboards? Again, my frustration, Steve, is almost think that beauty trumps usefulness, but I just need to figure out how to get over becoming good at dashboards.
Well, this is for me, the difference between internal communications or customer facing versus general public visualizations. You know, I'll use the person who's creating the infographic that's going to be in Wired magazine on page 13. Someone reaches page 13, what are they going to do to make sure somebody doesn't turn the page to page 14? That's a very different pressure than the type of stuff that I feel qualified to help people with, which is helping us make better decisions, helping show our clients what's going on, things like that. Now, that doesn't mean it needs to be ugly or dry or not something that you want to work with. But my focus is on the aha before the ooh ah, and get that right and provide something that's useful to whomever the audience is, they're going to use your dashboard. Now, the very best amongst us, and I don't put myself in that category, they can do the aha and the ooh-ah. But you want to make sure that you're not sacrificing an iota of aha, because you want to make something look cooler.
That, by the way, that is very quotable. It's very, what you just, aha, ooh-ah, it's very plagiarizable, Steve.
Well, it's you try it, Buster. It's in the book and it's copyrighted.
I know. Hey, I want to, in the time we have left, I've written down 9 different charts, and I just say what comes to mind, and I'm going to skip some of these. I shared some of these ahead of time, but slope graphs. What comes to mind, slope graphs?
I'm going to commandeer the question a little bit, if you don't mind.
No, please.
Which is, and I've spoken with colleagues about this, and you didn't ask this question, but we will sometimes get the, what's your favorite chart?
Right.
And it's, and my answer is, whichever one is going to be, you know, best explain what's going on here. The big aha in slope graphs is someone may have 15 years of data and they think they need to show all 15 years, where maybe the better story is, where were things 15 years ago and where are things now? Let's skip everything in between. Unless, you're misleading people, because maybe only the last year had this big change. You know, showing stuff about 2020 is probably going to be ridiculously different from any other year. So comparing it with 2000 or 2010 or 2005, well, just comparing with 2019 might be that. But this is a huge aha to people. It's a wonderful decluttering. You don't necessarily have to show everything in between. I will say that a lot of people, think of Alberto Cairo, because in
great writer,
in the functional art, he showed an example of this, and this was, wow, what a beautiful chart, what a great way to show this. So slope graphs have been around, but a lot of people, I think their first exposure to it might have been Alberto, and in that wonderful book of his. By the way, there's someone whose work I highly recommend.
Yeah, I love his writing. I'm going to throw one more at you. Actually, two more if we have time. I've actually have done a couple of bump charts for the reason you said, to tell a story. I had 10 data points and they were ranked from week 1 to week 13. And the person who was in last place slowly kept making their way up to second and first place. And I did a bump chart, and I think I got the right name, but, when you can in Tableau, and you may can do this in other software, if you highlight, you can see everyone grayed out and you can see that person or that product going up. And it's just a great way to tell a story. But go ahead.
So you're right in that, because what you're showing is how things are moving over time.
Right.
And if you're showing all 10 at once or all 15, it can be hard. If you highlight the one thing you're interested in, everything else gets muted. It's interesting that we use these musical or these audible terms. Oh, those colors are loud. Oh, mute those colors a little bit. But this thing comes out. My concern about the bump chart is it's showing ranking, but it's not showing the magnitude. Hey, this thing is now in first place. Is it in first place by a lot, or did it just squeeze by? So we discussed this in the Big Book of Dashboards. I'll confess, I can't remember I don't think I really discussed the bump chart that much in the big picture, but say if you want to show rank, there's a way to show the ranking and the bigitude and smallitude of the measure as well. And so you can see, oh, this went from 10th place to first place, and it's actually been neck and neck throughout, or, oh my gosh, it's now head and shoulders above the next thing. So that's my biggest thing about a bump chart.
Last one. I've seen beautiful visualizations of jump charts or jump plots. I've never done one personally, but there's a coolness to them. But have you ever found any use for jump plots yourself?
It's interesting. So someone's going to look up and look up Jump Plot, and there are two people that are associated with this. And sadly, I only remember one name, Christy Martini, who's a fellow Tableau Zen master and is working on a level way beyond me. And as is usually the case, whenever I see a new chart type, I think, what is this nonsense? I'm sure there's another way to show it. These people are just showing off. They're being fancy. And as usually the case with me, it's like, okay, here's another case where I've been schooled and realized my short-sightedness. It's a good way to show how much time it may take between in a process. And in software development and any type of product development, it's kind of useful to say, oh, we've discovered an error. Now it has to go back. It was at, you know, 6 of 7 phases, but now it has to go back to phase 3. How long is that taking? Can you make exact comparison with these beautiful arcs? No. Can it give you a good sense of where the bottlenecks are and where the problems? Yes. So I think we discuss it in the Big Book of Dashboards. And I've not made one, although I have in a common client said, oh, in expressing the problem to me, and said, oh, I know what you want. And rather than hiring me to do it, hire the people who actually know how to do this right now, because you'd be hiring me to fumble for a while. And they'll just be able to implement it immediately for you.
Two last questions, Steve. You do a lot of workshops. I'm assuming there is some young people, young analysts, young practitioners who attend. What are some of the important messages that you convey to them? People are just getting into the space, because this discipline is exploding, and that explosion may have started 3, 4, or 5 years ago. But what are some of the best pieces of advice that you have for people learning visualization?
Well, I would say this is not just for people just learning this stuff. It's for everybody. It's the importance of really knowing how is what you're doing going to help your audience. What do they need? What's keeping them up at night? How is this going to help them? And it's probably more than one audience. So really knowing your audience is essential. If you do this well, they become your collaborators. They're giving you feedback. You're asking them, hey, I've got a couple of different ways of showing this. Which one makes sense to you? And they then have a little ownership in this. I came across a killer quote. It's in the book, Say It With Chart. Here's the quote that's in it. And it is from Ken Hamer, work from AT&T. Designing a presentation without an audience in mind is like writing a love letter and addressing it to whom it may concern. And I can't do much better than that. That I'm such a believer in knowing who is your audience, what are you trying to tell them, how is what you're doing going to help them, and the final really guiding light on this thing. This has become my mantra in data visualization: provide the greatest degree of understanding with the least amount of effort. Obviously, the least amount of effort is for your audience. You may have to work your ass off, but you're trying to get to the insight and without making your audience have to work harder than is necessary.
I can't remember the author's name, but there's a book called Don't Make Me Think. That's the words I always think about based on what you just said. This may be a first. I just bought the book as you're reading that quote. Hey, last question, Steve. This is CFO Bookshelf. So we love books. We love reading. We love continuous learning, lifelong learning. What are some of your favorite books?
You know, we're talking about, all right, one book all time in my life. It has to be, you know, this book I read as a kid. And so many of us read it as a kid. Madeline L'Engle's A Wrinkle in Time.
I loved it.
Yep. Recent book, one that I'm recommending all the time to just help people understand, help them deal with the world and the crazy crap we're seeing going on, is called Mistakes Were Made, But Not By Me. And it's by, Tavris and Aronson. And it helps you understand and okay, now I get it. I see the behavior in myself. I'm certainly seeing it in other people, but it doesn't leave you much with, yeah, but what can we do about this? And there's another book in the same ilk. In the UK, it's called How to Make the World Add Up. In the US and Canada, it's called The Data Detective by Tim Harford.
Yes.
And it's superb. But it also has covers a lot of similar ground, but enough that's different to make it worthwhile to have both. But it also offers a possible, well, here's how you can maybe get people to not double and triple down and be so stubborn about things. So those come highly recommended.
No pun intended, the Big Book of Dashboards, your first book, and The Big Picture, I recommend to everybody, a work of art, no pun intended. But again, these are masterpieces, Steve, and just well done. And I will continue to encourage friends, peers, CFOs to be written and have both of these books. They need to be in everyone's library.
Well, I thank you for the kind words and praise. The Big Picture is a much shorter read. I tried to make something that people could an easy weekend read. Half of it is pictures. The Big Book of Dashboards, you drop that on your foot, you're going to hurt yourself. And it's more of a reference work. And let me find some inspiration. Let me find some help or assistance. I've got this predicament. So I would argue that's more to the practitioner. The Big Picture is more towards everyone else, the people who need to understand, use, and appreciate charts and dashboards so that they can make better decisions. And hopefully they will appreciate the practitioners who can absolutely transform an organization.
You are listening to CFO Bookshelf, lifelong learning for financial leaders. And now back to our host, Mark Gandy.
Steve Wexler, thank you very much. I sense you are definitely one of us. You don't talk down to those of us who are novices, or at least not me, and you speak our language, and you make the topic of DataViz very easy to comprehend, and it makes me want to learn even more. And speaking of learning more, start with Steve's books. I have both of them. The first book is The Big Picture. The subtitle is How to Use Data Visualization to Make Better Decisions. And he's also the co-author of The Big Book of Dashboards. And by the way, if you'd like to learn more about Steve's training and workshops, check out datarevelations.com. Let's call this a wrap. I'm Mark Gandy. This is CFO Bookshelf. Until next time.